Welcome to the Concept 101 podcast. My name is Daniel.
Jules.
And today we're also joined by special guest James Wheeldon, who is a concept artist working in the film industry, specifically in prop departments. So welcome, James.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, dude, it's great to having you today. Very excited to have more guests on the podcast. And I think it's a pretty cool opportunity to talk about film, art departments, more precisely weapon design. Yeah. So yeah, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I started in the industry in 2020. That was not an easy time for the film industry, the first job predominantly being Andor. And that job started and then COVID hit. Yeah. So that was kind of, awkward timing. But yeah, ever since then, I've been lucky enough to work in the props department, costume, and even a little bit of set deck. It's been a brilliant experience.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
So you started, your first job was on Andor?
Technically, my first job was Citadel.
Okay.
I worked in the costume department for that, but I got the Andor job lined up before I started on Citadel.
I might be very ignorant, but what's Citadel?
It's an Amazon series.
Okay.
Nice. With it's by the Russo brothers.
Mm. It sounds like you don't even really know what it is.
I know. I watched it. I had to watch it.
All right.
But I mean, like, out of all the designs I did, I was only on it for maybe a month and a bit.
Okay.
Cool.
And then, like, only one suit of mine that I got to concept actually appeared. But it was cool. It was really cool to see it.
Yeah. So, small kind of intro aside, like, how did you actually enter the film industry? What was your process from birth to first industry job?
From birth. I knew I wanted to be a concept artist. I wasn't too particular about film. I've loved film. I always thought it was it would have been an amazing opportunity, but I just wanted to be a concept artist, really. That's what my main goal was. Mm-hmm. My background is, I've always been an artist. I've studied at Wimbledon, I was doing a lot of sculpting, molding, casting. It was a much more physical job. Mm-hmm. After working in that industry for a while, I was still talking.
Until this day, you still talk.
I was still drawing. Oh, Jesus. And I didn't even know concept art was a thing at that time.
Yeah.
I was showing my sketches to a mate of mine, and he was like, "This looks like concept art." And I was like, "Okay, what is that?" So after learning a lot more about it, I was like, okay, I've got to get into this. I quit my job, and then I just sort of sat down for the next 3 years of my life, learning everything I could, building up a portfolio, researching different softwares, and
So what was that job prior to concept art?
It was, there wasn't even really a title, I suppose. I was a model maker.
Right.
And
what was that for?
I worked in a lot of prop houses and...
So that was already linked to the film and TV industry?
There were people doing that job in the film industry, doing a lot of, physical mold making and sculpting and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I was always very excited hearing about their work on these amazing films, but, I never... I never got to work in the film industry on that. Yeah. That was always something I'd wanted to do, I wasn't really that good at it. I enjoyed it. It was some interesting work, but it was nothing compared to just sitting and drawing. That's really where my passion lied. So it was much easier to pursue that.
Do you think that then when you transitioned into concept art, that gave you a good grounding? Because something that I think a lot of people especially in film, complain about from a production standpoint is when a concept artist designs something and then they have to build it and they go, well, how the fuck do I build? Exactly.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. That's not a functional thing. Yeah. What do you expect that's doing?
So do you have a lot of that kind of like functional language that translates into your actual work now?
Now having seen the lengths at which prop makers can go to, I know how limited my knowledge was. But I've got a basic understanding, enough for me to go, if I was to build this.
Which I assume is still a much broader knowledge than most people, right? I think because since you've been doing so much physical build, and you probably understand materials better than people, you probably understand like layering better than most people, especially other concept artists.
I mean, it has helped, yeah. So it's nice to sort of, there's a bit of those skills lending themselves to what I would do now, but you know, and I'm still learning. You know, I talk to the prop makers as I'm interested in just how they're creating what we've come up with.
Yeah,
and if it's something I've never seen before, then I'm asking all these questions and I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't think that would be part of the process. And it probably does influence, you know, a lot of the designs moving forward. And you know, you just think, oh, maybe they'll use that tactic for this, or you know, this technique.
So in terms of you going from props to that initial concept art job, there must have been, considering that mainly what you focus on now, right, are prop designs, there must have been quite a nice transitional kind of like crossover to there, like not too much of a jump in some ways.
Not sure what you mean, really.
Well, you went from prop making to prop designing.
Yes, well, it was... Well, this is the thing. It was sort of starting from scratch with the concept art, because I didn't think I was going to be doing prop design. I was like, I thought maybe when you start a concept art portfolio, just like my initial go-to was environments and stuff. I thought that's what you needed in a concept art portfolio, and that's not really. I'm not very good with that. I'm not good at...
So going from prop making to prop designing was completely unintentional then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. No. This. I'm glad I did it. I'm very happy, but there was no method to this.
just pretend it's all calculated.
Yeah.
All as I planned it. So when you were doing prop making... Were you designing the props you would make, or would you get sketches, or would you interact with any sort of concepts?
I think we're massively overstating how how technical I was as a prop maker. Yeah, I was a lot of the time. I was just on a team.
Okay,
I was just a lot of bashing shit together to create whatever we could. Nowhere near as technical as the stuff the prop makers are doing when I hand them a concept. I don't think I ever even got concepts, maybe one or two, just sort of initial illustrations to give us an idea of what we're hoping to achieve before we make it. But for the most part, it was just do as you're told and, you know.
Just be a good soldier.
Yeah, which I think I was. Nice. Until I left. I said, I'm not doing this again.
So the transition happened that you decided, okay, I want to do concept art. And then you went, I guess, off station. You were like, what do people do?
Yeah, pretty much.
Looked at work on there. And
yeah, exactly. What's good? What is considered to be a good concept artist? Yeah. How do you get into this? And I just at the very initial stages, it was like, I've got some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Start drawing them out. I had a whack on, got a new computer and everything, and I was like, okay, I'm doing the things I think a concept artist would do.
It's going to look so good, and then you're like, fuck, it's awful.
And it took me forever. But
so what happened then where you went from prop maker to totally kind of unintentional, I guess, like concept art practice to then back to props? Like, what... How did this happen?
The practice wasn't unintentional. I knew I had to take some time to dig into it and get to know.
Yeah, but
you
were doing things that I presume are, like you said, you were practicing like environments, which is not like a massive part of what you do today. So then what happened in that transitional period where you went, actually, now I'm doing props again?
It was this was quite a long time into the 3 years. It was maybe yeah, it must have been the last year or something, I was getting to the point where I was like, okay, I've built up these skills. And I just started, you know, I got in touch with artists in the industry, mm-hmm. trying to get tips. And I had a great chat with an artist who told me basically to focus on what I want to do. And because he was looking at my portfolio, and it was exactly as you can imagine, just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And it didn't really have a, you know, I kind of figured that was the way to go. You know, you want to, yeah. you want to just show off that you can do stuff. This, that, and yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Variety of skills.
Yeah, broad, exactly.
Broad range of it, yeah.
But he was kind of like, no, what do you want to focus on? Because this is looking a bit prop heavy. And I was like, okay, yeah, I could do that. So
sounds familiar.
But it wasn't, you know, it was, he was saying it was more because of the details that I was focusing on. I kind of spend a bit too long zoomed in, which is a bit of something I'm still trying to work on to this day. But it wasn't until all my friends, they knew I was trying to get into concept art. They didn't really know how I was going to achieve that either. But one of them saw a post on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a film group, London mm-hmm. film and TV jobs, that sort of thing. And it was a listing for what was eventually that Andor job.
Amazing.
But
wow, Facebook.
I know. It's very weird.
It's crazy.
Very strange.
Yeah.
But obviously he didn't put that on the group. He put, what did he say? It was something like, artist for a well-established sci-fi series. It's like, okay. It's either Star Wars or Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I was looking at my portfolio and I was like, there's not really anything in this that's gonna wow some the prop master of a Star Wars show.
Mm.
So, but I was lucky enough to get an interview, and then he'd set a date, and I remember it being a Tuesday, and I was like, okay, if I just get something ready for that day. And I tried to push it. I was like, can we do the interview on Thursday maybe instead? And
did it work?
No. So Tuesday it was. And so I was like, okay, screw it. I'm just going to try and do something. Mm. And it was a bit of a shock to the system, because I was like, I need to get something by that time. I don't know if I can do this. And then I sort of said to myself, well, this is what the job's going to be like. You're going to need to have a concept ready for the next week. So
yeah.
Get on it. And so I just bought up a load of Savage's stuff, and I used that as inspiration to just go, right, what would...
You copy and pasted it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just flipped it.
World War II gun. Add the little ball to it.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. I mean, yeah. I learned a lot more about the Star Wars process, but
yeah.
Just looking at his work was a real inspiration, and I sort of just started sketching a massive page, two pages of guns, nice. And
yeah.
chose one, took that, modeled it, and lit it. And I made sure to save that for the interview in the last piece I showed him, because I'd shown him a bunch of other works, which, yeah, they weren't props. So he was just like, what are you showing me this for? And I could see him about to sort of cut me off and be like, yeah, I'm not really looking for... And then I showed him this last one, and mm-hmm. he was like, okay. Oh, shit, this could be good.
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff I'm after.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought in a senior concept artist that had been working on the project for ages. And I was like, I guess this is a good sign.
He was bringing him, and he was like, come look at this fucking idiot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look at this guy.
You go out of the room, you hear them laugh, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you believe this? So yeah, that was, but you know, at the time, this was my first interview. This was the first sort of me putting myself out there. I'd been locked away in my room for 3 years, just thinking, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing here.
Yeah.
But what an amazing opportunity as well. I mean, so many people spend their whole lives trying to work on Star Wars. Yeah, and I mean, obviously, you worked incredibly hard, but to respond to a Facebook ad, right? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is the thing. I remember people saying, when I was looking to become concept, I was like, what is the one thing that everyone always does?
Yeah.
And the amount of time, I don't know if you guys heard this, but the amount of times I just hear, I just got really lucky. I'm like, well, that's not very helpful advice for me trying to get, but that's exactly what happened.
Get lucky, man.
Yeah, right. Just get lucky.
What are you waiting? Get lucky.
But I mean, people always say, right, that luck is the kind of intersection between effort and the, you know, the alignment of random shit around you, right? But that's probably not as nicely put as other people would say.
There's definitely like, you can, that's why you did 3 years of hard work getting better, building the skills, right? That's why you got the job.
Really?
But then of course, there's the luck of the opportunity. And also, you know, because you spent 3 years learning the craft then, and also because you did the effort before that interview to be like, okay, what does he want to see? And then you just hit on the nail perfectly on what they wanted to see. That's not luck. That's just you having knowledge and putting all your knowledge into practice to go in the interview and be like, I know what I'm doing. That's what they want to see.
Absolutely.
And then boom.
I mean, I think people should just say in the comments whether you deserve your job or not.
I think that's we can have a fair way to
collective vote.
I've always wanted to know. So that's great. Yeah, we finally got a way to do this.
I know to measure. Sure, when I had like when I got my first job, there were, I mean, generally people were pretty nice, but there were definitely a lot of people who were like, I'd be like, hey, I got this job. And they were like, really? You? Like, yeah, I remember very specifically somebody messaging me and being like, yeah, I was like, oh, I got this job. And they're like, you got the job? And I was like, yeah. And they literally did respond, you got the job? And I was like, this motherfucker.
No, thanks for building
who
me
do
out,
you
guys.
Know? Yeah, like, who do you know on the crew to...
Yeah.
But I feel like that's, you know, it is a very harsh and hard industry to get in. And when people get a lot of rejection, which I had for a year, I had only rejection when I was applying, then you look at people getting the job and you look at the work and it's very easy to go like, I can do better, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a reason why they're hired and they're not. And probably the day those person would get hired, they will probably get it. That's, oh yeah, I got so much better in the past few months, in the past few years, because I did all this hard work.
Not me though, I bribed them.
Yeah, well, that's another way to go. I've been doing it ever since.
But I mean,
no, I kind of agree though with what you were saying. Like, it is that preparation for the lucky opportunity.
Yeah.
So if,
I mean, even the week before preparation, you did, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that sort of just made sense, didn't it? It's like, I don't think he's going to like any of this. He didn't, and then I did something that he did. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but that's, you know, like, you could have thought, well, he got me an interview, so he must like what I do.
Yeah,
and then
I
you
don't
just
even looked at it. I think he just needed a concept artist quick.
But I mean, it's incredible that you so early on in your career got to work on such an important and like really well received show as well, which I think really helps. Without getting yourself sued, can you like tell us a little bit about the experience of working on it and like the different takeaways you've had? One thing that, I mean, you know that I very, very briefly for like a week and a half worked on Andor to design a little stupid droid.
Yeah.
And my whole experience of that was just people saying, not quite Star Wars enough.
Oh,
and then
really?
Going back to the design board.
Oh, wow. God, that adjective is used over and over again. It's just make it more Star Wars. It's, it's become its own.
Yeah.
We hear that
like,
all
what
the
do
time.
You mean?
I don't know at this point. Oh, that's funny. No, I didn't realize that. But again, feeling very lucky because it was very well received. I remember at the time telling my friends I've got the interview. Mm-hmm. Couldn't tell me what it was other than that. Well-established sci-fi franchise. And we were like, okay, well, what Star Wars shows are out coming up? And it was Andor or Kenobi. And at the time, I was like...
I think you lucked out there.
At the time, I thought, oh, I hope it's Kenobi. Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going to come of that. But and also it was just like, this is, it's very similar to like, who is this? Why is he getting a series? So I was kind of thinking this, it won't be well received, but I don't care. I'm just glad to be a part of the world designing some cool stuff. But yeah, man, it was a crazy experience. It was, you know, you're sort of pinching yourself for the first weeks, just going, this is insane. I've just spent all week, you know, coming up with ideas, sketching things out. Very similar to the past 3 years of my life, but now I'm
now on Star Wars.
Now you're taking it for granted.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you wake up every morning, you're like, oh, this again.
Make it more Star. Yeah, I heard you the first time. So it was incredible. And, you know, it sort of just kept getting better and better because, you know, you start designing and then you think, that's such a great, this is the best part of the job. And then they start bringing these designs too. They're 3D printing this stuff and handing.
So cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I remember them bringing the first rough print of like earlier versions of Cassian's blaster, and I was like, wow. And I was just like holding it in my hand, and
that's what I drew. What?
I drew that. Hey, I did that. It was a surreal experience, and that has happened up until now. You know, just so many different designs. The prop maker's excited to bring it in. I'm excited to see it, and it depends what it is. If it's a big thing, I have to go to them. But still, I don't mind. I'm happy to
just bring a spaceship.
Yeah.
Look, James, working engines.
So yeah, no, it's really quite mad.
So before, you talked briefly about a prop master, who's the guy who kind of interviewed you. So, because I think people are quite used to the way Daniel and myself work in VFX, which is VFX art departments, which are outside of movie art departments, which is different.
Yeah.
Where you work in the movie art departments, and especially on the props. So can you explain how was the structure of...
Yeah.
What's a prop master?
Yeah.
How do you guys do... What kind of range of work do you concept? Like, right. How does that work?
Yeah, everyone's... the concept arts are quite specific on the job. So I work for the prop master. But there's several other concept arts we've got, like, I think... on season two, I can't remember exactly how many we had, but we had a few in set deck. We had one in costume. And then I want to say three in the art department. And so art department will sort of cover a lot of keyframe concepts, and a lot of environments and stuff. But that's all sort of workshopped with art directors and
which is closer to the structure that we use.
I imagine, and then you move into set deck. I mean, the way we sort of split props and set deck is anything that a character touches or uses or interacts with, that's a prop.
Okay.
And then if it's
something they stand on.
Yeah, I don't know.
If they touch the set? That's how does that work?
Well, I mean, stuff like that. That's set deck do a lot. They've got a lot to design.
Yeah.
And then costumes, pretty self-explanatory. But yeah, no, it's for me specifically with the prop master and the hand props and weapon supervisor. We sort of, they've got so many props. You know, and this is from a well-established sci-fi series. So they've got a lot of old props that already exist, like a Stormtrooper D11 blaster and all sorts of things like that that they've already got. So I don't need to design everything. But when it's a hero prop, it's going to be quite center stage on camera, then we sort of spend a fair amount of time trying to get the best look for that, get it approved by everyone and directors, designer, that sort of thing.
So you've got a director who's directing the whole show?
We've got, for Andor, you've got the showrunner, Tony Gilroy, so he's pretty much got final say, I'd say.
Yeah.
On almost everything. And we've got several directors for different episodes. And the production designer is very heavily involved. I know I just said Tony's got final say, but he's got final say on the look of everything. So we send everything. I have to get the prop master's approval, but then he's got to get the production designer's approval. So, yeah, it's...
So can you walk us through, like, roughly, let's say they say, look, James, we need the last Andor gun. It's not doing it anymore. We need a new one for him for the next season, okay? What's the actual process that comes with it? Are you doing reference gathering? Are they giving you briefs? And then how does it go from that starting point to final gun in Andor Man's hand?
Andor Man. Andor Man. That's the spin-off series.
And he goes
series.
Pew pew on his hand.
I mean, there is a lot of reference gathering at first. It's they give me a brief, and sometimes they've already got a lot of reference for me because they've put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah, it's part of the job as well.
Yeah, yeah.
to guide you.
We'll sit down and it's a spoken brief. Most of the time, it's not too specific in the script what it is. Sometimes it's very specific. Mm-hmm. But if it's a gun, for example, I think it's just a lot of sketching at first. Mm-hmm. That's when I'll mount a load of different references of the kind of thing that I think would help or would just look cool for this particular weapon. Go through... the numbers vary. I wish I'd said it. So I always try to do at least 10 or something, but it's just whenever a prop master will walk into
whenever
my
like it.
Room and just go, oh, I like that. Oh, I'll stop then.
Like, finally.
Yeah. 3 weeks. What's the most variations you've done then, do you think?
Oh, God. I don't know. It's not...
I mean, hundreds?
I've heard you say hundreds before, which I've always been skeptical of.
I'm just lying.
I figured you are, but I didn't
want to... I just say one. The most I've ever done is one.
I haven't worked in concept art in 5 years.
It's all an elaborate scheme.
It was all personal projects.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've done what feels like a lot will be getting into the... I've done. I think I want to say like 30 something on specific. Mm-hmm. There was this one. It was season one, and it's Luthen's Gallery. They've got all these different
art pieces and artifacts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was one of those, and I just didn't really understand the brief. I guess that's why it took so long, because I was just back and forth like this, that, this. So it's just a bunch of sketches that none of them, so many failed iterations.
No, James, for last time, not a coffee cup.
Yeah.
I like coffee.
So they just, it can be pretty slow. And then, sometimes it's first take and you go, they choose the first sketch I did, even though I've done several. Yeah. And they go, that's the first one I did. I could have just shown you that and gone. once I'm done with the sketch, I normally go into 3D. 3D is a huge part of it.
What do you use?
I use ZBrush.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's going to
end the podcast.
And we're done.
Dan is a massive fan of ZBrush.
I mean, I don't dislike ZBrush, but I do understand the functionality of it for hard surface design, but especially with props, I imagine you would be using like at least Plasticity or something, something CAD based, so that they can actually 3D print it.
I'm quite happy with it.
So why do you use ZBrush? Is it like because that's what you learned, or is it because it allows you to kind of build it very quickly?
No, it is just something I've just become a bit more, you just get used to. I mean, my first 3D tool was Fusion.
Okay.
And then I just remember that feeling quite mathematical and, methodical. And I wasn't feeling very arty. And once I discovered how you could, use like ZModeler and get...
Oh, so you are polymodeling in ZBrush?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's even worse. I mean, that's so weird, James.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a weird dude.
I mean, it sounds like it does the job very well.
Yeah, I like it.
Come on, like using a what is essentially a voxel-based program, and then you're like, I'm using the polymodeling feature.
But you use stamps, I assume, right? Or you don't use stamps at all?
Stamps.
Oh, that's what the way I call it. Maybe I...
It's
like a brush which has the alpha brush shape.
No, I don't. No, not really.
So you model the same way that you would model in Blender, but in ZBrush?
I suppose, yeah. I don't know. I don't use Blender, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's uh, It's great. I enjoy it. I think it's
that's quite the insight, I gotta say. I don't really know what like follow up questions are.
That's right. But it's still it works. You know, you can still save the stuff out as an STL, and the prop makers aren't
probably quite useful to make scratches and stuff.
Then. Yeah. Well, yeah. You don't really do that.
Okay. You
know. Don't try. Just don't try, Jules.
I'm sure it makes sense somehow.
I mean, that's great though, because I think it is important for, you know, a lot of people who listen to the podcast, who a lot of them are students, right? You listening out there. that a lot of concept artists actually do use software, which I think to a lot of people do sound a little bit confusing in terms of usage. Mm. And for example, there's some amazing keyframe artists who I know who use the most arcane software humanely possible, which hasn't been updated in like 25 years, but they're still better than everybody else. Mm. And I think like, as long as you're comfortable and able to use it functionally to do your job, I mean, nothing really else matters.
I think
even if you're using PolyModeler and ZBrush.
And so your colleagues, they also use that software, or is that just...
Oh, no. Everyone's got their own thing, really. A lot in art department use Blender. Everyone's got a different 3D modeling software. I mean, whenever you're sharing files as well, it's always coming from a lot in the art department, not so much in terms of concept art, but a lot of people in the art department use Rhino.
Okay.
That's a big popular one. But for me, it's just as long as I can save it out as an STL if it needs to be printed, or OBJ, send it to the prop makers there.
And so after that, are you responsible for, you know, you got your file, Earth props. Are you responsible for like planning surfacing across it? You know, like doing parts where you're saying like, okay, we're going to have like scratches and like specklement here, doing edge wear in these areas.
Yeah, I mean, I just do that all in the rendering software, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just sort of...
So Polypaint? Oh, no, the rendering software, which is...
Yeah, no, I love Keyshot because it's...
Keyshot,
You just sort of... they've got very similar to Photoshop, the sort of masks and layer blending and that sort of stuff. Yeah. So that's always been my workflow. And that's the same thing I used when I did that initial concept that got me the gig. So that was sort of my go-to reflex of, I need to do a concept by next week. How would I do that?
Yeah,
I'm going to use ZBrush. I'm going to go for that.
Yeah,
and it
works.
It's worked out great since.
And so I assume that you'll see it. So first sketches, you get the brief. Then prop master, I guess he has a pretty big overview of the whole project, so it would guide you. Then you get the model. I assume you still get feedback while you model it.
Yeah, no, stuff can change. But this is quite why I quite like the workflow I do, is because I check in a lot.
Yeah.
I'll do main check-ins will be, okay, I've done all these sketches, which one do you like?
Yeah.
And then once I've modeled it, I'll check in again, and then I do the color. And then that's when,
And so I assume you also go and talk to the prop makers quite often.
Yeah. No,
they keep trying to lock them out.
It just gets back in.
He's smashing down the lock with his Andor gun. Let me in.
Yeah, no, it is quite a treat to go and see them all just doing their thing, because everything isn't designed by me, so they're working on all sorts of stuff that is just really interesting to watch that process, especially when I'm not the one having to do it, because I have no idea what I'm doing.
Just add a little gibble somewhere, and they're like, it's gonna.
I do try my best to sort of make it, just get more involved so that I can help in any way possible.
Yeah,
totally.
But the head prop makers over there has just sort of many times have been like, just do it, just send us the design, it's fine.
Also, I guess we should have Star Wars.
Yeah. Stop. it's really cool though. So you probably, I'd imagine, have spent much more time on set than me and Jules have. Because I mean, between us, we've been twice, maybe, or three times.
Yeah,
you were there for a week for a show.
No, right? I think
was it long?
Total 2 weeks. And so I have interacted, I think, in a similar way that you have, but very, very little amount. Mm. So I would more work with an art director on a set.
Mm.
And then at some point I had to design a prop, which I cannot talk about, but
okay.
It was fairly similar. It was like they gave me an old prop, which was so cool. I had it in my head, and I was sketching. And it was a similar process to what you just explained. But that's it, right? Then that's the old experience I have. Or when I was working on designing a set, I was working with the art director of the set, who would give me feedback on, oh yeah, well that wouldn't work. Or like, oh, we need this to be wood because of budgets or whatever other reasons they have,
which
would also guide my designs and the way I would go forward with the whole concept.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are we missing out on, James?
Well, let me tell you. Actually, don't let me tell you. I shouldn't say. No, it is really cool. I mean, I do try my best to sort of stay cooped up in my room and just sketch away. But the amount of times people come to my office, oh, have you seen that set? I'm like, nope. So I should make more of an effort, but I do just want to sort of get on with it. But I've still had the luxury to see a few things, so whilst I hit render I can just venture out there. And
so are you generally working on site, like at is it Leavesden or Pinewood?
Working at Pinewood Studios maybe. Right. Yeah,
lovely.
And yeah, they've got some really cool sets. I was lucky enough to see a few things. I'm trying to think of season one. I think it was my last day. They were like, well, you've got it. you've done the job. You can at least go and see a set now. Like, okay, fine. And it was the prison set of...
awesome. Nice.
Yeah, towards the...
Such a cool set, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one.
And so do you need permission to go on set? Or like, Or do you just walk there? Because I assume your office is not too far from it? Or
yeah, they've got a lot of coloured lanyards of just like, you're allowed on set, you're not. But as long as you're with someone that's...
You have to wear a prisoner outfit to get in the prison cell.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot to do with it being Star Wars as well, right? Because they're famously far more secretive with how they do set bills and stuff than everybody else. I mean, again, just from like my limited experience, after I was done with my day on set, there was still a few hours of the day left, and James Klein, the production designer, just went, yeah, you just wander about now.
Yeah.
And I went... I was looking around at like all of the security personnel. I was like, I think I'll just go home.
Touch things, you break something. Oops.
Yeah, exactly. I was really scared of just like messing something up. And then also because when you're working there like full time, so people actually know who you are probably by face.
Not really. I mean, I'm
well, not full time, but you're there.
No, I am there full time, but nobody knows me because I sort of hide away. Like, there's people do know me, and you know, I do try and make an effort to get to know as many people as I can, but for the most part they're like, who's this guy?
Okay, so you all look equally as creepy as I do.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful.
I'm in the props department, but I'm the only one doing concept art or anything, so it's kind of like, maybe we should sorry, I was really distracted.
we were just asked what was the time of the podcast, and I did it with my hands.
You did it in the most confusing way possible.
It's Morse code. We've been talking for 38 minutes.
Thank you, Jules. That's great. Wonderful.
I was worried you were going to say this. You've been rambling on for 2 hours.
No. It's. I'm sure people are extremely interested in that.
Yeah. I'm not sure. We'll find out. Tell us in the comments.
Tell us in the comments after you say whether James deserves his job.
Yeah. I'm genuinely interested, guys.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. I mean... You have such a different, essentially, just like not only approach to how you make art to what me and Jules do, but also the fact that you're actually on site is a massive difference as well. Mm-hmm. I think in my experience, that actually I get to interact with clients a lot, but it's in a very, very different way. Mm-hmm. So do you have any kind of like insights for people? Maybe somebody who's listening is like going to go on set sometime in the future, right?
Right.
What are your insights for actually working functionally on site on a film?
Versus
at home, you wear pyjamas and fall out of bed at 9 o'clock before the meeting starts.
I mean, it's a weird one because there are a lot of concept artists that do want to work from home, even on jobs like this.
Yeah.
But I've made a very strong point of it to make sure that I'm in every day. I want to be there. I want to be amongst it all. I want to see, especially if they can't bring props to my house and show me those. So, I I think it's in terms of, you know, if somebody wanted to get into that, is that what you mean? Like maybe if they wanted to get
yeah,
into
it. Just take us in whatever direction you want there.
How much money do you need for someone to pay you and go on set? That's the question here.
But yeah, I mean, how do you find it? That's all.
I find it amazing. I think it's incredible. You meet so many cool people that have done such, they've always got such great stories to tell because they've been working on all these different projects and you know, all this gossip of different actors that they've worked with.
And then James said this to me and then I spoke to the actor and he said this.
No, it is really exciting. And of course, you know, Pinewood, you're not just seeing the stuff that's going on for the production you're on. You might catch a glimpse of something else. Yeah, you obviously can't take any photos or anything.
Yeah.
Or talk about it. So, yeah, no, it's such a buzz of excitement because it's like, and it's also, it's like a bit of a, sort of a weird community or city in Pinewood. Like, they've got, you know, the canteen and everything, and just everyone's just running around like crazy whilst all this stuff is being filmed.
It's very specific, and it has a very specific energy as well. I remember when I went in Bad Wolf Studios, and it's like an ant
colony.
Ant colony, yeah. It's like an ant colony.
I said it, James, you got it.
I saw that.
It's like one ant, man. No, but you know, like everyone is running everywhere, doing random shit that you don't understand. But everyone has a purpose into what they're doing. And then you have the catering, and then you have the actors.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have so many people all working towards one same mission.
Exactly. Is
to get ready to when the guy says, it's like, bonkers. Action.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so interesting to see.
Yeah.
And everyone is like, seems like they're all helping each other, and they're just all... getting it done.
Oh, they are.
And it's very motivating. Like that's when I was the most motivated about my job, when I saw everyone at the same mission, let's say.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you less motivated now we work together?
The more I see Dan, the more depressed I become.
It's interesting you say that film sets are like an ant colony, because I have to say that generally, both from my own experience and like other people I've spoken to, it's more like an ant colony on fire most of the time.
Yeah, no, it can be pretty chaotic, but you know, they always pull it out the bag.
Yeah,
they nail it.
Yeah,
they have to get it done, so it gets done.
And if it doesn't, post will fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then that's what you guys.
That in me are saying.
Yeah,
it's amazing though, and it's really cool that you know, like I said, we said earlier, you've had such a like phenomenal start to your career. Yeah. So, in terms of that, I mean, what is next for James Wheeldon? Like, do you have any kind of like long term ambitions of like what you want to do, what you want to get involved with?
Yeah, I love doing the props, and I'd still consider myself very lucky if I got another prop gig, I'd like to do some more costume work. Do some more costume illustrations and designs in that sort of area, because it's just so exciting. I it's really cool seeing your props on screen, but I don't know, there's something about seeing your costume on screen is like, oh wow, he's really animating that. You know, just like running around in something that you've just dreamt up is really quite exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first saw this like released set photos of that series that you have no idea about, Citadel. I was like buzzing with excitement when I saw that.
That's awesome.
Whereas, you know, It takes dedicated fans, Star Wars fans, to spot the details and like, what is this prop? What is that function? What does that do? Which is always fun to see as well.
Yeah. I mean, I assume it doesn't happen on every show that people are so involved, like that you have such a strong fan base looking at it.
Oh, God,
so it must be very rewarding to see people excited about a gun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, I'm sure on other shows, they would just think it's a gun.
No, it's amazing. So
it's probably in like 25 Star Wars breakdown books where they've like dissected it and they've been like, and this is what this part does, you know?
Yeah. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, does it?
I mean, that's another thing. Like, people do just come up with functions for these things.
Yeah.
They just sort of go, and then they ask me about, oh, did you have an idea? I was like, I had an idea, but
They see people, a circle you put in, and is that meant to be a quantum actuator? Yeah. And you go,
It's meant to look cool. Does it?
I remember even related, because Star Trek to Star Wars, that's practically the same thing, isn't it? One of my old colleagues, he was very, very involved in some of the Star Trek stuff that was quite a few years ago. And I remember him telling me that he went to one of these conventions, like a Star Trek convention, to discuss like some of the stuff he designed. And every single fan who came up to him was just like, so how did you think about the quantum drive working? Oh, and he was just going like, I don't know. Next question, please.
Quantum goes beep boop.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it works.
No, it's like, at the end of the day, these are, it's not my ideas. They're all bought and paid for by Disney. So whatever they say, it does. Absolutely. It does.
So in terms of doing more costume work, what, because I mean, that's also very different, I feel, to prop stuff, in terms of you probably have to have some understanding of like pattern cutting, I would imagine, to actually functionally make clothing. So what's your kind of like, do you have any ideas of like how you're going to ramp up towards that in a way?
I mean, I'll do what I can. I've got a few mates who work in costume, and it's in a similar way on Citadel when I would go into the costume makers, you know, that's going right over my head. Whereas when I walk in prop makers, I go, oh, okay, there's some more familiarity with that. But yeah, looking at costumes in like, I had no idea. But at the same time, you know, they're gonna do their own thing anyway, because you send the concepts I send to the prop makers are mostly what they're interested in is the 3D file, because that's what's gonna, you know, that's what's gonna get printed.
Yeah.
Whereas I can't really send anything that helpful other than an image to the costume.
You're getting the Marvelous.
Yeah, I've thought about this. I need to research that a bit more, because
there are actually as well some other programs which go a little bit more in depth than Marvelous, because my younger brother, because he's in his field is fashion.
Okay.
And so he's actually experimented himself with quite a few of these softwares, including Marvelous. Oh, but there's another one, I think it's Clo3D, where it goes a little bit more in depth into how the stitching and stuff works, and the simulation of the actual fabrics.
I mean, I can picture myself learning all that, and I just have a feeling I'd send it to them, and they'd be like, no, we're good, we'll do our own thing. Okay.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask, because as well, sometimes, I was going to call you Stefan, Daniel. Daniel and me would be asked to do similar tasks that what you do, for example, props or costume. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes we have to. And on previous production I was on as well, it was like I was having a pass on a prop, but then the prop designer would also have a pass on the prop. Mm. Or same costume, they would hire their own artist, and we would also do work on costumes. And then it would be like just a few designs, and then they would just pick it up, just whatever sort of they think look the best.
Mm. I gotta say as well, whenever I've like personally been designing something that had to be physically built, whether it's set or prop or whatever else, generally my role has just been to come up with the like dream version of it, I feel. And then it gets sent to the AD and they go, oh, what the fuck, and then
this guy doesn't know anything.
I do remember a set designer that I worked with just complaining about, I was like, oh, what did you think of the set? And she was like, it was great until I had to build it.
Exactly. Well, that's a big part of it.
But yeah, so did you interact with that kind of other artists which are not as which don't do any, sorry, which work is as tangible as what you do?
Or like, I've never really, it's mostly just sort of pretty linear, you know, we keep it within the department, but every now and again we need to collaborate on something. So like if it's going to be a prop that, I don't know, intersects with set deck, then we need to trade files and stuff. And but for the most part, no, it's kind of just we keep it in the family.
Nice. I thought you were working on Star Wars, not Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Oh dear, that's brilliant.
Well, I guess one thing is like, again, we've spoken about sets, we've spoken about all this stuff, but again, most people listen to students. So if somebody wants to do what you do,
yeah,
again, with the kind of foresight that you now have as to how the career path you went down and now working in these departments and, you know, actually understanding what is needed.
Yeah.
What would you like, you know, going down into specifics, what would you recommend that people do to get your job essentially?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not your job.
Well,
find my address.
Yeah, exactly. It's really tough because it's, you want to, I mean, I'd say the main thing is probably going to be, once you've got your portfolio to where you want it and, and you know, you're happy with your skills, that's kind of.
But what skills do you think someone needs to develop to do your job? Because I imagine it's going to be very different to the skills that me and Jules have developed for our work.
Yeah, definitely a good understanding of 3D. You need that. I think even if you could do brilliant paintings that look better than my concepts, which you probably could, you can't print it. So it's like if I do a gun in 3D and it gets approved by the designer and everyone, that file is also technically approved. Mm-hmm. So it's something the prop makers feel quite confident that they can, as a very good base to what they're going to do, they can use that.
It makes you very valuable in the production setting because it's like that guy will design it and he will get us a 3D file.
Exactly. So I think do that. Connections are a big part.
Look out on Facebook.
Yeah. Hang out on Facebook Marketplace.
And what would you actually put in your, like, let's say,
put in your portfolio?
We've murdered James.
Yes.
And I'm trying to take over his place in society. Okay.
Can you open the doors? No.
That's going to stay locked until the end. But yeah, let's say that there's somebody like wants exactly your thing, right? What is the perfect portfolio for them? Like, if they had like five projects, what are those five projects going to be?
Well, let's say we're talking an artist on a show like Andor. I think a gun is a very good thing to have.
To hold to the head of the art director.
Just like the gun you're currently holding to my head. And have been for this whole podcast. it's just there's so many guns in Star Wars.
And do you think it's better, like, for that part of that portfolio, right? Is it beneficial for them to do a Star Wars themed gun or to do something outside of the genre to show that, you know, they're not just doing fan art, quote unquote?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I went straight in. I was like, no, I'm doing this as if it is a part of the Star Wars world. Mm-hmm. That's at least what I thought my portfolio needed to impress this guy. And, it's sort of dressed for the job that you want, not the one that you have. So it was kind of very intentional.
Yeah.
I see what you mean though. And I think it would be good to just give an understanding of design. Yeah. That is important, but I think at the end of the day they're going to be just quite, as long as it's an impressive looking thing and you know you can physically visualize having that in your hand, that's what they're after there.
So that would be like, let's say, five projects, and each project you would have sketches.
And all guns?
No, I wouldn't do all guns, but make sure, that was another thing I'd always been told, is make sure you show your sketches, and even for that project, I showed my references as well, just to be like, this is just, I wanted to give them a very clear idea of how I was thinking about this, before I took it to the final thing.
Do you reckon any knowledge in like 3D printing or prop making, which you do have, do you think that's also allowed you some advantage, or to be just more valuable to the prop master?
I think it's a sort of effect I don't really, you know, notice in the day to day, but it might be a very, very big contribution to the work that I put together, because it is, you know, that is a lot of it, is just looking at things and going, how is that put together? And what, you know, this piece goes into that. And that's all quite, you know, covered in, you build anything in 3D that in the, you already know how you're, especially if you're doing it poly modeling like I do. If I was a bit more cavalier with like, ZBrush and just dynameshing it and starting putting in all these details and stamps and stuff, as you say, then it would be, it's just a lump of clay at that point. So yeah, I'm kind of, you know, intersecting pieces, and just, you've got a bit of a, you in your own head at least going, oh, and I imagine the, you know, whatever the reach, you can recharge it here, you plug in, there's a gap here for this, and this is how you would assemble it or something. So it's, you know, using that much imagination as possible to help bring it to life. And
So gun next?
I would go gun. I think you gotta think about, I'm trying to think now what I spent, you know, what I did a lot of data pads. So many.
So some kind of thing that people interact with, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of that. It's nice to have something that, you know, I don't know, folds out or something. It's got a bit of function, and it's exciting to see that in this different stages. So, you know.
And would you provide things like animations or?
I'd love to. I don't really know how to do that.
Do you think if a student did it, it would be valuable?
Oh, fuck yeah. I think that would be interesting, wouldn't it? You know.
I'm asking you.
I'm asking you. What do you think? No, it is.
Write down in the comments below.
I think it'd be great. I mean, I've seen a lot of animations and things. I don't really know how quick that is in terms of the workflow. And, you know, I've spent ages on an animation, and then it just gets rejected. It's like, okay, I won't bother with that.
I've had that a few times.
I have provided a few animations. I call them animations just for lack of a better word, but then they're not. They're just like GIFs of something.
Animatic.
Sure, yeah, whatever. And that's helped just people who are seeing it for the very first time understand it. Totally. Okay, this opens that way and does a bit of that. So I've done some of it, I've touched on it, but sometimes it is just the best way to explain your idea if a big part of the prop is it's moving or it's functioning or something. It's like if I'm shown designing something that opens and I just show you
it closed.
It shut.
Just imagine the inside.
Yeah, yeah. It does have an inside. Okay, well, what does that look like? So something like that, something that's, you know, operates. It's and it doesn't need to be anything too fancy, but it's just like something you go, oh, that's cool. That's a really interesting way. It's a simple thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm spitballing here, but maybe just the way a ship lands and something, you know, like
landing gear,
but no more to get off of it and stuff.
So you would even potentially design things like that where it's like a movable piece of an existing design.
My title on season two was, they didn't really,
ship door designer.
I don't even remember like asking for this title, so it was kind of weird to just see it there on the crew list, but it was like action props and
that's cool.
Action prop.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know.
That's cool.
I'm not even sure I know what an action prop is.
I wish I was an action concept artist.
I've got action in my
head. You're just very fast. You move very fast.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's active.
In meetings, you always look like very motion blurred because you're too
constantly
fast.
Jogging on the spot.
Yeah.
But so I think something moving is fun. Mm-hmm. So that you've just got on the concept sheet, you could have a few different, you know, just stages of it unfolding or whatever it is. Da, da, da.
Beat one, beat two, beat three.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think what else would be a good thing for the portfolio.
Just give us one more. I won't make you do five.
No, I probably wouldn't.
Phone, a grenade.
Grenades, yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. But it's just not much to fill the image with that. It's like, there it is. You know, it's a little small thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a collection of grenades.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just making up homework for people about this.
I mean, related to what you were saying earlier, it sounds like a good thing would probably be like something like an artifact collection, you know, similar to what you were doing the shop.
I think.
Because that might give you as well.
Shows range as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can do like, here's 20 different objects, not 20, but 20 different objects, which
you've always got to show, go over with the numbers, don't you?
Here's 2,000 different objects. I mean, look, if you did it, it'd be quite the fucking project.
It would be impressive, but they're only going to approve one.
So. Patience. Yeah. Also, I think showing a variety of similar design, I think is very good because you also show that you can
consistently do a design which fits within the same world.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, yeah.
So,
no, I think that's great. Yeah,
as a grenade so, or a...
Yeah, yeah. Different functions for
artifact,
that.
Artifact, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you think, like, because obviously so far in your career, you've mainly been doing sci-fi stuff.
Mm.
Do you think, like, out of interest, like, is it potentially, if you wanted to do it, right, would it be easy for you to transition into fantasy stuff with your portfolio? Or do you think that in the kind of art departments that you work in, they're looking for kind of specified genres in a way when they hire people?
I mean, yeah, the proof will be in the portfolio. So, you know, there will be, they'll want it. I would hope if I was hiring for a fantasy thing, I would be like, I want to see some fantasy stuff in the portfolio. Totally. It's like, if I just show a bunch of, you know, like guns and stuff, they're like, thanks, man. Looks great, but we're not really looking for this kind of. So yeah, I'd love to do something like that. I really love like swords and shields and armor and that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I'd love to do something like that. But
so I assume that all this boils down to having a fairly specialized portfolio, right?
I think so.
So if you want to work on a specific movie or a specific TV show, you need to know what it's going to be about. What kind of props do they need, and then work on your portfolio or work on your content.
But that's I feel like that's a recipe for pain for a student, right? Because there's no way
you're right.
Like, within our circle of people who work in the film industry, we're all aware of like different shows that are coming along. Mm. We all know different people who are working on those shows because we're inside the industry. Whereas I will say I've met some students in the past who've said to me, like, who've come up to me and literally said, like, I heard that this show was in production. Oh. Can you tell me who's working on it? And I was just like, no, like, no, I'm sorry. Like, I would get sued. You know what I mean? It's like, so for a student, I'd imagine it's probably, I mean, the gist of it is, I feel if you can't touch it and you don't do it, if you want to have a job like you have, James, and probably to hit like a nice range of genres and subject matters to an extent, right? So if you want to work on Star Wars, right, but Star Wars only has so many jobs going around, do one that's kind of Star Wars-esque, one that's a bit more Star Trek-y, one that's a bit more Battlestar Galactica,
right,
and have that kind of range of motion almost in what you're creating.
Well, I think that's a good way to go, and it's, you've got to sort of keep it quite, you've got to focus on what you want. So if I was a student now learning how to do this, I'd be like, okay, obviously, as I started with doing those environment things, and I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
You just check that off the list. I was quite happy to just go straight into the stuff that I did want to do and build up that kind of portfolio rather than, you know, just if I'm focusing on stuff that I think people want to see, then that's, I'd rather be more prepared for the job that I really wanted came along.
Because I think also when you prepare for the thing you want, often a lot of people associate with that and they'll also see the value in what you're creating.
Yeah.
If you're preparing for that thing that you want eventually. Yeah,
exactly.
Which is a nice note to finish up on. Do you have any closing statements, James? I think, you know, when we have guests on, we like to put them on the spot. So if you could tell us something meaningful, that'd be great.
Something meaningful?
Yeah.
That was all meaningful. You just heard my bloody life story. And
I don't know. Didn't really do it for me.
can we try that again?
Just can we wrap it up in a nice, like, you know, one sentence? Maybe something you saw on a poster or...
just an inspirational quote.
Yeah.
That we are after. Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Yeah, thank sure. You.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got nothing, guys. Just keep drawing. That's it.
Nice.
You know, don't stop.
Awesome. Well, thanks, man. It was very, very impressive, interesting to hear like this side of production, which I think most people are not familiar with.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that'll be the end of today's episode. We really hope you enjoyed listening, and if you want more, please feel free to subscribe and ring the notification bell. You'll also find, alongside our social media sources, James's down below in the description, so please go and check out his work. We release episodes every 2 weeks, and if you want any more additional information about the podcast or the event, be sure to check out our links. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.